John Rock's long battle on behalf of his birth control pill forced the church to take notice. In the spring of 1963, just after Rock's book was published, a meeting was held at the Vatican between high officials of the Catholic Church and Donald B. Strauss, the chairman of Planned Parenthood. That summit was followed by another on the campus of the University of Notre Dame. In the summer of 1964, on the eve of the feast of St. John the Baptist, Pope Paul VI announced that he would ask a committee of church officials to re-examine the Vatican's position on contraception. The group met first at the Collegio San Jose in Rome, and it was clear that a majority of the committee were in favor of approving the pill. Committee reports leaked to the National Catholic Register confirmed that Rock's case appeared to be winning. Rock was elated. Newsweek put him on the cover and ran a picture of the Pope inside. Not since the Copernicans suggested in the 16th century that the sun was the center of the planetary system has the Roman Catholic Church found itself on such a perilous collision course with a new body of knowledge, the article concluded. Paul VI, however, was unmoved. He stalled, delaying a verdict for months, and then years. Some said he fell under the sway of conservative elements within the Vatican. In the interim, theologians began exposing the holes in Rock's arguments. As the Catholic Journal America concluded in a 1964 editorial, the rhythm method prevents contraception by abstinence, that is, by the non-performance of the conjugal act during the fertile period. The pill prevents conception by suppressing ovulation and thus abolishing the fertile period. No amount of word juggling can make abstinence from sexual relations and the suppression of ovulation one and the same thing. On July 29, 1968, in the Humanae Vitae encyclical, the Pope broke his silence, declaring all artificial methods of contraception to be against the teachings of the Church. In hindsight, it is possible to see the opportunity that Rock missed. If he had known what we know now and had talked about the pill not as a contraceptive, but as a cancer drug, not as a drug to prevent life, but as one that would save life, the church might well have said yes. Hadn't Pius XII already approved the pill for therapeutic purposes? Rock would only have had to think of the pill as Pike thinks of it, as a drug whose contraceptive aspects are merely a means of attracting users, of getting, as Pike puts it, people who are young to take a lot of stuff they wouldn't otherwise take. But Rock did not live long enough to understand how things might have been. What he witnessed instead was the terrible time at the end of the 60s when the pill suddenly stood accused, wrongly, of causing blood clots, strokes, and heart attacks. Between the mid-70s and the early 80s, the number of women in the United States using the pill fell by half. Harvard Medical School, meanwhile, took over Rock's reproductive clinic and pushed him out. His Harvard pension paid him only $75 a year. He had almost no money in the bank and had to sell his house in Brookline. In 1971, Rock left Boston and retreated to a farmhouse in the hills of New Hampshire. He swam in the stream behind the house. He listened to John Philip Sousa marches. In the evening, he would sit in the living room with a pitcher of martinis. In 1983, he gave his last public interview, and it was as if the memory of his achievements was now so painful that he had blotted it out. He was asked what the most gratifying time of his life was. "Right now," the inventor of the pill answered incredibly. He was sitting by the fire in a crisp white shirt and tie, reading The Origin, Irving Stone's fictional account of the life of Darwin. "It frequently occurs to me, gosh, what a lucky guy I am. I have no responsibilities, and I have everything I want. I take a dose of equanimity every 20 minutes. I will not be disturbed about things." Once, John Rock had gone to 7 o'clock Mass every morning and kept a crucifix above his desk. His interviewer, the writer Sarah Davidson, moved her chair closer to his and asked him whether he still believed in an afterlife. "Of course I don't," Rock answered abruptly. Though he didn't explain why, his reasons aren't hard to imagine. The church could not square the requirements of its faith with the results of his science, And if the church couldn't reconcile them, how could Rock be expected to? John Rock always stuck to his conscience, and in the end, his conscience forced him away from the thing he loved most. This was not John Rock's error, nor was it his church's. It was the fault of the haphazard nature of science, which all too often produces progress in the advance of understanding. If the order of events in the discovery of what was natural had been reversed, his world, and our world too, would have been a different place. Heaven and hell, Rome, all the church stuff, that's for the solace of the multitude, Rock said. He had only a year to live. I was an ardent, practicing Catholic for a long time, and I really believed it all then, you see.